At 35 past the hour, let's welcome in Parker Gabriel from the Lincoln Journal Star. Are you following the Lincoln Riley shut down the media, not going to tell you who his quarterback is story?
Yeah. I just saw some of the fallout from the student newspaper doing its thing.
When was the last time that anything good came out of a head coach shutting down access?
It depends on whose perspective you're talking about.
True.
It's just from my experience, that is not usually a value add type situation when you lock it up like that.
Doesn't it? But we're in the world of this day and age of guys at that position where only one can play. That if you make a change, you do have to keep in mind that guy may go. He may just take off.
Yeah, that's definitely true. The interesting thing about it is, like, the OU Daily story, the student reporters who you know, stood on the rooftop with the binoculars, which I've never actually tried that at Nebraska, I can say honestly, but I've heard that they keep a pretty close eye on that parking ramp that's adjacent to the practice facility. The thing about the story was, it's not like the way the practice reps are getting split up at Oklahoma's practice, like, is somehow catching Spencer Rattler off guard. Like, he's there. He knows he's probably not going to be the starter this week. And then two, the OU Daily talked to his dad, who also sounded like he pretty much knew the score.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't. The interesting thing about all of this is, I can understand if you're a coach, you don't like reporters talking to parents. You definitely don't like reporters snooping around on rooftops with binoculars and all that. But, like, what, once you say, I'm not announcing who the starter is, I mean, that sounds an awful lot like Caleb Williams in this situation. So what is left to keep under wraps? There's nothing. There's not much of a surprise left in the situation anyways. So all then it really is retaliation in hopes that the anger will be taken out on the student newspaper, which is not the way it's going to go.
I agree. There's not the same position, but now we're going to see at Nebraska due to the injury to Teddy Prochazka, Parker. Bryce Benhart, who had struggled to begin the year. There is no denying that. Lost his job. Now he is pressed back into service. And in that quick moment where he had to come in on Saturday night, I think what you were expecting, he held his own. Now this is the game you go, okay, what does Bryce Benhart 2.0 look like? What do you think Prochazka's injury will do to the offensive line that now, outside of Noelle, kind of looks like it did, well, actually looks like it did during the Michigan State week?
Yeah, that's a good question. We'll see. You know, and it wasn't just Benhart. I mean, you know, Turner Corcoran had his ups and downs, too, over the first seven games. And so that's a young tackle pair. Obviously, Benhart's in his third year in the program. He started 13 games. He's been on the field quite a bit. Corcoran is legitimately a really young player. It's going to be interesting to see. I thought Prochazka really sort of settled things down a little bit there, and Nwelly helped with that, too, on the left side. But, you know, sometimes with Benhart, you know, I don't know that we've seen him play a stretch of dominant football since he was, you know, since he's been a starter, but he certainly played better at times than he showed over the last couple of weeks before he watched for a week. So in that regard, like, maybe the breather, maybe watching a week, maybe feeling what it feels like to lose your job, you know, if all of that sort of gives you a second wind or helps you clear your mind and sort of get back to what you know how to do, I'm not saying he's going to be an Outland Trophy winner all of a sudden, but maybe it helps to sort of reset and play at the level that he's capable of playing at this point in his career, which, like I said, I mean, we've seen him play better, and including like against Illinois early in the season, you know, maybe it helps spark him to play at a higher level now, stepping back into the starting lineup and doing it on a week when he's going to be playing right down the road from his hometown in Lakeville.
Last couple of years, and Benhart is part of this question, and especially on Saturday night, the third quarter has been a nightmare for Nebraska. offensively, they just can't find anything. And then it's almost like it's too late. But the third quarter has been better, really on both sides of the ball, but the focus on the offense. Why do you think that is, and why do you think the offense looks so much different out of the locker room on Saturday night compared to really going into the locker room in an ugly second quarter?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's multiple pieces to it. Matt Lubick yesterday, you know, both Sam McEwen from the World Herald and I, we sort of had this conversation with him during his news conference about the third quarter and adjustments and that whole sort of line of thinking. And Matt gave a couple of really detailed answers about how they game plan and what the play sheet, you know, not obviously the specifics of what's on it, but just sort of how they lay out a game plan. Mm-hmm. And some of it, like, I think some of the reason they've been better in the second half of games, part of it's because they've deferred so much that they know they're going to get the ball to start the second half. And then you treat that a little bit differently, probably at halftime, of like, hey, you know, you're going to get a drive that starts at the 25 or, you know, whatever. It's just you're going to have a possession there that you know. Whereas, like, when you don't start the game with the ball, you never know what your first drive is going to look like. Mm-hmm. Or your defense might force a turnover and you're starting the ball with the ball in the 35 going in. You might get pinned deep at your own five. That probably changes how, you know, your script has to be a little bit looser if you're playing defense first in the game. But also, you know, Matt said his second year here, you know, I think it's really been a good addition for Nebraska to have Ryan Held in the box. You know, Matt's focused on calling the game with, mm-hmm. with Frost, and Held is up there watching. And, you know, that I think their ability to communicate and adjust and make changes on the fly and maybe, you know, draw something up or, you know, reach deeper into the bag for something has just been smoother this year. And Lubick said that yesterday, in part because of, you know, he gave credit to every other offensive coach on the staff. And I think in part of it, it's just because it's his second year and everybody's a little bit more comfortable with each other.
Do you have an understanding on how game days in the course of a series, how play calling goes?
Yeah. I mean, what Lubick always says is that calling the game mostly happens before the game. So I think the idea is, you know, Scott's probably the voice actually calling the plays, but there's a lot of the way Lubick talks about it is there's more set pieces than you might think during the game. I mean, he mm-hmm. said, you know, first, third and medium or fourth and medium that they saw, they thought their best play was that what they ran and hit Omar Manning on, you know, on fourth and six on the opening drive. So who speaks the words, I don't know, but Lubick said, you know, you recognize the situation, you know what you want to get to, and you call it. So that's a joint decision that's made before the game about, hey, first time we get this look, this is what it's called. And so whether that's Lubick saying to Frost, hey, you know, top fourth down play mm-hmm. or whatever the play is called, or if it's Scott knowing, hey, this is what we're going to, you know, I think Frost probably is the one making the final decisions as the game goes on, but certainly you know, Lubick is reading the map, so to speak, at the very least, in the press box and giving the turn-by-turn directions or at least providing a lot of input.
I'm guessing on fourth down and 10, the final play offensively for Nebraska, they didn't expect Michigan to bring the entire house on that play.
Yeah, it's interesting because Lubick said, hey, if you told me fourth and 10 and cover zero, this is the play I'd want, the one they ran. Now, he also said, when they bring seven, you want an inside breaking route. They thought they maybe had it protected a little bit, although, you know, they had six to protect seven, so against seven coming. So, you know, he said, yeah, perfect scenario if they're bringing an all-out blitz and playing zero on the back end. Like, you probably want an inside breaking route, but really, he really stood by, you know, against man coverage, which is what they figured they'd get on fourth down. They went tempo and had, you know, a play, you know, sort of in the can. It's a can mm-hmm. play, basically. You've got it set up to go fast, and it's one of the calls they've got that they can get to when they go fast. It's easy to Monday morning quarterback. I'm a little surprised they didn't get up there, get the look, and check to the sideline. Mm-hmm. But you know, Matt said, if you get the right if you get the right timing between the receivers on the outside there, that's a natural rub play. And he said he thought if his receivers would have executed it better, it would have looked pretty good. I guess we'll never know.
Do you think, and what, I know one of the topics of discussion, and I think it was your question or somebody else, but it was kind of the question that a lot of us had is, Why didn't Xavier Betts play more? We got that understanding. He's battling a little injury. And then Omar Manning being there at the end of the game. Do you think going up tempo and Omar still not a complete grasp of the entire playbook also factored into five not being on the field at the end?
I think it depends on. If you take Lubick at his word, which I mean he's been pretty straightforward with us as far as I can tell, is really about they trust. More than just a couple of guys in those scenarios. And he said they just were trying to stay as fresh as possible. Now, obviously, from 3rd and 10 to 4th and 10, if you're going to go tempo, you're not going to sub and give the other team a chance. So, he just said it was basically where it was at in the rotation. I mean, they had Ture, and I don't remember who the receiver he was paired out there with was. But he said, we really trust Levi Falk. We really trust Oliver Martin. And obviously the tight ends. So the way that they see it is it's just the way the rotation goes and trying to keep guys fresh as the game goes along.
Parker Gabriel from Lincoln Journal Star joining us. Let's go over to the other side of the ball. What got into Cam Taylor-Britt? We've seen that guy before. He returned to form. How would you describe his Saturday night and his inner reasoning of all of a sudden – he was back to playing like the potential all Big Ten guy that we were looking forward to in this year?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what in particular it was. I mean, whether it was the ability to sort of, put the first couple games behind him and really just, play and play free. I know for sure. I mean, he was in on the first two tackles of the night. The first two plays Michigan ran, he was right in the mix. And I'm guessing, for a guy like Cam, he likes being physical. He likes playing aggressive. Maybe just getting two hits in on the first two snaps was enough for him to sort of lock in. Sometimes you take a quarterback, say that all the time, right? Take the first hit, and then you're sort of settled into the game. Maybe delivering the first two hits of the night help Cam Taylor-Britt lock it in.
You've now seen in person Michigan State, Oklahoma, Michigan. How would you rank those three teams?
Repeat the question.
You've seen all three in person. Michigan State, Oklahoma, Michigan. How would you rank them as the most impressive to least impressive, but you know what I'm saying. And if you had to do a pecking order of a power rating between those three, who would be one, who would be two, who would be three?
Man, that's tough. I think I'd rank them Michigan, Oklahoma, Michigan State, but there's not a ton of daylight. In particular, I think I'd go Michigan, Oklahoma, Michigan State. Now, Oklahoma was a different beast in that second half with Caleb Williams in there. I can understand why, too, just with the rookie threat. It's not what we saw in Norman was not the quintessential set of Oklahoma skill talent at receiver. I mean, the running backs are good. They're not markedly better than Michigan's pair of Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum. The receivers are, I'd be tempted to take Michigan State's top two guys in that conversation. But if you put a dual threat quarterback in that Oklahoma offense, now you're talking about, another element to deal with on top of a group that's been maybe not like blow your socks off best in the country, but it's pretty good. And so, I think it's close, but I'd go Michigan, Oklahoma, and then MSU.
We all still kind of, I think we have a handle on who Nebraska is, but we're still kind of trying to figure them out getting to week 8. Do you have any feel on who this Minnesota football team is?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think, defense, they've been pretty stout, especially since the Ohio State game. Now, they've had problems offensively, and obviously when you lose an All-American running back, that's not a good that's not a good way to start the season. And then they just looked really bad against Bowling Green. You know, I think they're probably a little bit more dangerous than people want to give them credit for, just because of the way they can play on defense. And, you know, they stop the run. They're top three in the Big Ten in rushing defense so far. And then for as sort of anemic as their passing game has been so far this year, I mean, they're getting Chris Altman Bells played the last 3 weeks, coming off a bye. It's probably, you know, he'll be as comfortable as he's been going back to, you know, when he got hurt. So I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, Marquise Irving, the guy who you're probably going to see at running back, has been impressive in the short amount of time, even though he's, you know, the third guy with Ibrahim and Potts now out for the season. So I don't know if we know exactly who they are, but I think you're going to see a hard-nosed defense and a team that even, you know, with its top two backs out, wants to try to get downhill at you.
How's this game won on Saturday in a place where, I mean, two straight years Nebraska's lost to Minnesota, but 2 years ago was not a good look. How is Saturday's game won?
Yeah, by matching the physicality. You know, I think if Nebraska does that, they'll be in good shape. I just think they probably got a little bit more skill talent-wise on offense. You know, they've got the ability, they've shown the ability now to handle, everyone's very familiar with the outside zone and the stretch stuff and the RPO. You know, that slant that they throw so often at Minnesota. And so, you know, they've got a better handle on that. And so if, you know, if the defense plays well and Nebraska matches physicality, I think they find a way to make enough plays, to get a win, but that's not a guarantee. And that also, you know, you're sort of building in, another week of no big special teams errors into that equation too. So close game feels like a close game to me, and you got to match physicality first and foremost if you're going to beat Minnesota.
Yeah, if you said a close game around here, it'd be like, I think at Minnesota they'd go, okay, we'll take it. Plus they're getting Dylan right back at wide receiver, who was not with them for Purdue. PG, as always, I appreciate it. Safe travels up to the Twin Cities, and we look forward to the coverage. And, of course, as always, you and Sip together pre, during, and afterwards.
Always. Have a good week.
That's Parker Gaber from the Lincoln Journal-Star. We'll have much more on Minnesota and Nebraska, and we'll run around college football week 7. Tomorrow also is the start of week 6 of the NFL with Tampa Bay and Philadelphia, and game 5 between the Dodgers and the Giants. It is what baseball wants. It is the 24th time that they've played, 70 years after Bobby Thompson shot heard around the world. We get the Dodgers and the Giants to move on to play the Braves. We'll do all of that tomorrow. Big thanks to all of our guests, Robin Washington, Scott Shanley. The mailbag, which was fantastic, came up with an idea. We will try and now put it into action. And Parker Gabriel. For Josh Hodson, I'm Gary Sharp. All the segments, all the content, all the laughs, all the make you go, up on the radio replay page, 1620 The Zone, of the Gary Sharp Show tab. We're back again tomorrow at 10 with another edition of the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.